The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Oakland Athletics, winning two games out of three. They now stand at 51-41 on the season, and they occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jason?
Doing pretty well. First show together, so welcome aboard. It's good to have you on. You know, mid-season adjustment here, but you're coming on an exciting time. So I think you should be in for a good ride here.
Of course. I'm really excited. Hopefully we keep winning, going to the All-Star break hot and beat the Royals. So this has been fun so far. It's my second episode and really excited to meet you guys and learn more about the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Absolutely, yeah. And just for our listening audience, if they want to find you on Twitter and bug you like they do me and Terry, where can they find you?
So it's just Nick Diamond Media, at Nick Diamond Media, that's it. So that's my entire Twitter handle, or X handle, now that it's called X.
I think it, isn't it N Diamond Media? I think that's what it is.
I think you're right. I think it is N Diamond Media. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, all good. Jeremy had no idea what his Twitter handle was when he came on. We're like, hey, what is it, Jay? He's like, I think it's this and that. And anyway.
He always had he had the JT show part, but he kept changing the number at the end. So
he didn't know that. Yeah. And so Nick had his introductory episode. That was a Wednesday drop. If you haven't listened, you can find out more about him and his path into the show. I'm Terry. I kind of jumped in before Jason could bring me in. But yeah, you can find me at Cushman MLB. Find the podcast at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram. We have a Substack. I promised we'd get back into it this week, but it's probably going to be next week. And I promise we will be back next week with that. And probably plenty of topics, especially since there won't be as much baseball. Are you guys all-star team? Like, does that the home run derby is fun?
Yeah, like I'll watch the home run derby. Even that, like, lately has been, it's not as good as it used to be because you watch it and like the ESPN broadcast, they just litter your screen with all this stupid crap about here's the launch angle of that one and here's the expected, you know, distance of here, and it's like they shrink the screen so you feel like you're watching on like a computer. It's like it's such a terrible product now. So I'll watch a little bit of that. I don't watch a single second of the actual game. I could care less.
I used to be a big All-Star game guy and a big home run derby guy. And I don't think I've watched a single pitch of the All-Star game since Brock Holt was an All-Star and he got struck out on three pitches by Jacob DeGrom. it hasn't been the same in the last like 6-5 years, whatever it's been. And it's just, the product is not as good as it used to be since they got rid of the home field advantage in the World Series. It's just, it's not as entertaining as it used to be. So, I mean, I'm a big baseball fan. Like, I get bored when there's no baseball on, but the All-Star game doesn't do it for me.
Jason was talking about all the data on the screen during the home run derby. And I agree. It's a lot, but I did learn last year, like, the ideal launch angle is between 25 and 35 degrees. And if you're at least 98 or 99, it'll go out. In most parks, those are the sweet spots. 98 plus with a 25 to 35 degree launch angle. It could be 38 degrees if you really launch it, you know, with some extra velo. You'll see that. but it's so fast paced you can't even see the balls land half the time because they're already on the next pitch. So you're reliant on just watching the score on the bottom, like, did it go out? Or, and then sometimes you'll be like, oh, I swore that one was going out, but it didn't, you know. It's just, it's crazy. So I'm not that into it either, quite frankly. And then you got the draft, and it is exciting to see the first, our first couple of picks, but then all of your Twitter feed is just littered with, you know, the Blue Jays signed their fourth round prospect to this, and the Rockies signed their second round prospect. And it's like, oh, come on. You know, it's like trade season. You're trying to see if a trade might sneak through, but you're, so you can't turn off the notifications in case that happens. So you're getting pelted with draft stuff. And all I care about, obviously, is Red Sox picks, but is what it is.
Yeah, I can't wait to see which shortstop they take this year, because that's the only position they draft these days. So can't wait to hear everyone tell me that he's going to be the next Nomar, too.
Where are we drafting? Do we know?
We're the 12th pick this season.
12th?
We finished like 78 and 84 last year. I mean, I know Chaim Bloom was taking only shortstops basically in the first round. Hopefully that's different with Breslow, but we'll see.
Yeah, we don't know if there's any mock drafts that have us taking a certain player or no. Maybe 12's too far down. I don't know.
I think the last mock that I saw was that the Red Sox were taking a shortstop, which sent me into a blind rage, and I had to close Twitter after that. But yeah, I don't know if there's an updated one, but yeah, the last one had them taking a shortstop, and I was like, of course it does. Yeah, great.
Yeah, well, we have a GM that used to be a pitcher, so I guess there's hope. I thought we'd be drafting like eighth or ninth, but I guess 78 wins still gets you, you know, outside the top 10. But I don't know. How'd you guys feel about the series?
So, I mean, it's one of those where you're playing the Oakland Athletics. So obviously you want a sweep because this team is so pathetic. And I do like some of their young guys they have in that lineup, but boy, their pitching is just so bad. And you really hope that, you know, it was three games of just the Red Sox offense just teeing off. And it really was just kind of two out of three. So that middle game was just kind of a dud where Red Sox didn't show up for whatever reason. And like, Sears is an okay pitcher, but you should be able to get to him. You should be able to get to any of these Oakland pitchers. So I still feel pretty good. Again, you're still gaining ground. Yankees are playing terribly. Baltimore's playing terribly. So you're still taking advantage of that, gaining ground on those guys. But a sweep would have been nice, but I'm not going to complain about two out of three. So still feeling pretty good.
You know, when you're playing the Oakland Athletics, you expect a sweep, but a couple of things I learned about the Athletics this series is they are not as bad of a hitting team as I thought. Like, Brent Rooker has a 900 plus OPS. Zach Gelof has been hot lately. Lawrence Butler hits the crap out of the ball, but they swing and a miss so much. Like, Nick Pivetta had 20 plus whiffs and he wasn't even that good. I mean, like, Nick Pivetta, I mean, he's probably gone next year, but he has a first inning where he stinks. He has a second inning where he stinks. And then he strikes out eight guys in a row. And it's just very frustrating that he's so up and down and he can't put it together. And he's going to end up as like a 4.4, 4.5 ERA guy. And that's who he is. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a winning series, so we're not going to be focusing on, you know, the negative aspects of it, but Pivetta would have been a negative aspect of it. And Bayo had the wonkiest line I've ever seen. 11 strikeouts, nine of which came in a row. He didn't strike out the side because there were some walks and hits, but every out for the first three innings was a strikeout. And but he gave up nine hits, five earned, walked two, lasted five and a third. I mean, this series has been how the season has been going. You've got borderline trash pitching, but your bats bail you out. And I mean, I can't believe we're here. I can't believe we're 10 above 500. And so, but at this point, who's to say it doesn't just keep up? I don't know. It's a really wonky season with tons of anomalies, but, and if you sweep Oakland, you're 12 above 500. But if you lose one game, you only really gain a game, you know. So we're 10 above now. So, you know, it is what it is. We're kind of treading water with that last wild card. We have the Royals coming up, a very pivotal series, because they need to win just as badly as we do. And they're probably going to be getting some kind of an upgrade here in the next couple weeks. They need to, their pitching is great. So, I mean, they're just going to be adding some offense to that lineup, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you still take the 2 out of 3, you're still trending upwards. And it's a good way to roll into this Kansas City series before the All-Star break, getting a little bit of momentum on your side. You're going up against a tough team that's, you know, kind of neck and neck with you in that wild card race. So important weekend before everyone, you know, kind of gets to take a little bit of a break. So it's nice to win that final game against Oakland and come away feeling good about that at least. So with that, we will get into our top five list. Obviously, Red Sox win the series, so we're going to be focusing on the five players who kind of brought us there. So, Nick, you are in the leadoff spot. Who is coming in at number five?
So I'm going to pick, at number five, we got Sedan Rafaela, who in the first game went 2 for 5 with an RBI. In the second game in the loss, he also went 2 for 4. And today he went 0-4, but he also made a really good play at shortstop, you know, like a little jump throw in the hole. You know, he's not an everyday shortstop. He's a center fielder naturally, but he's been doing a good job at shortstop, and I'll take it every single day. You know, he's replacing Trevor Story to the best of his ability. And, you know, at this point we have no real shortstop besides Marcelo Meyer in the system. So he's doing a very good job to at least keep us afloat. I mean, we're 10 games above 500, so we're more than afloat.
Terry.
In the last 30 games, he's hitting 322 with a 345 on base. I mean, again, I'd love to see him walk more. I mean, he's only got 3 walks in the last 30 games. I think that's only, my computer's slow, 11 on the season. Yes. So he didn't draw a walk the whole series. Where is he at with runs batted in? He was leading the Red Sox. He's not anymore. He's second.
As of yesterday, he was at 51 and second. Devers passed him.
Okay. Yeah. Devers is 7 above him. Devers is 289 right now with a 374 on base. Like, if he has a monster second half here, I don't think there's any catching Judge, but he's probably going to land in the top five, I would think, if the pace continues. But getting back to Rafaela, the dude just continues to surprise me. I mean, he had tons of red flags, you know, and we've talked about him. The pitch recognition hasn't been great. He whiffs a lot still, but he's scrappy and he makes contact and he puts the ball in play. And then sometimes he just runs into one and just absolutely crushes it. And I mean, he's looking at, he could be a 2100 guy. That's about the pace he's trending. And, you know, the strikeouts are a little concerning. He's not quite on pace for 200. He might top out around 180 or so. So you'd love to see that number come down. And again, the walk number go up, but he's exceeded my expectations this year for sure. And I mean, we've gotten pretty good production out of all the young guys. We're going to be talking about another one later on. But he's holding it down and one of the best 9-hole hitters in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and the good thing about it too is that when he's not hitting, he's still playing great defense in the field, which we saw in game 3. Yeah, he went 0-4, but he had a couple of really nice picks at shortstop and made a couple of slick plays over there. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like Jose Iglesias when he first came up, but he's a little bit of a better hitter than Iglesias was. He's just so smooth. defensively. I mean, he takes these ground balls on like the, you know, most difficult hop, and he's just casually picks it. He's blowing a bubble, you know, in the middle of doing it with his bubble gum, and then just makes a perfect throw to first. Like, he just has all the confidence in the world in his defense. I just wish some of that confidence would translate to the plate. And I think he's slowly getting there. You can see him starting to drive the ball a little bit more. The plate discipline is the only really big red flag with him right now. I mean, only 11 walks in over 300 plate appearances so far this year. That's pretty bad. So, you know, he's definitely got to work on that, but he's a young hitter. That's something you can absolutely teach a young hitter, is better pitch recognition, better plate discipline. You know, he can absolutely get there. Devers, when he first came up, was a strikeout machine, and, you know, was always swinging at the first pitch and just swinging out of his shoes most of the time. And he still strikes out quite a bit, but he's become much better, you know, these last couple of years. So there's no, you know, there's no reason why Rafael can't get to that point as well. And again, just the pop that he's showing. I mean, he had a ball he hit in game two that I thought it was going out. You know, he really got it. He got most of it, went off the top of the wall, and then Jamie Westbrook stupidly decided to try and score from first base. So that wasn't great, but it's nice to see that little bit of power coming through too, because if he can be a guy that, you know, like you said, Terry, if he's a 2100 guy and he's playing that kind of defense, you've really got something there. And so, you know, then it looks like they made the right move, you know, locking him up early and into that long-term deal, because if he can turn into that, I mean, and he's hitting, you know, down the 7, 8, 9 part of your lineup, that's huge for this team. So again, would like to see his strikeouts get cut down, but if he's still playing great defense and driving the ball when he, you know, makes contact, I'll take it. Absolutely. From your number 9 hitter, yeah, you'll definitely take it. So with that, we'll move to number 4 on our top 5. So Terry, who do we got coming in at number 4?
Number 4 will be Connor Wong, who continues to just put together a very consistent season behind the plate offensively. On the season, hitting 314 with a 374, by far his best season behind the plate. And you keep waiting for these numbers to come down, and some of these guys kind of have come down a bit. You know, Jaron Duran was hitting like well over 300 for a while, but his average came down. And but I can't say enough about Connor Wong. I mean, you look at some of the better catchers right now. I mean, you got William Contreras with the Brewers. He's hitting 292 with a 353. He may very well be the Logan Ohapi, I guess, and Adley Rutschman. Adley Rutschman's the best catcher in Major League Baseball. But very quietly, I mean, Wong is basically a top 4 or 5 catcher, and I don't see that changing. So you just wonder if this is the level he's going to play at going forward. I mean, his plate discipline is so good, and I think his strikeouts are also pretty low. I mean, we talk about Alex Verdugo and how great he was with his plate discipline, and I mean, Wong's just as good.
Yep. Nick.
So with Connor Wong, I know we got a lot of Kyle Teal talk coming up, and I really would love to keep Connor Wong long term playing every day. I mean, he showed a lot this year that he could probably sustain a 750 to 800 OPS. And at this point, I love him catching, but I think he's the everyday second baseman. And like, going forward with Kyle Teal as your guy, I really want Connor Wong playing second base every single day later on in the season, you know, or next year. With Kyle Teal coming up, I think Connor Wong, he's sustained a 750 to 800 OPS. And I think that's him for the next 3 to 4 years. I think he's a great player, and I would love to see him batting in the lineup every single day in like the bottom half. And he's a right-handed hitter, which is a thing that the Red Sox really, really need. So I'm not surprised that he's kept it up. I mean, I'm really happy that he's, you know, batting about 800 I mean, I'm batting. He's got like 800 OPS, and I hope he can continue. And I'm very happy that he hit a home run today. He's been slumping, so I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, it's really weird that Connor Wong is not an all-star. I mean, we talk about the all-star snubs and how some of the Red Sox kind of had to claw their way onto the all-star team. But, I mean, Connor Wong should be an all-star given how good he's been at his position. And I know the American League has some good catchers in there. Obviously, Adley Rutschman's probably leader in the clubhouse there. Cal Raleigh out in Seattle. Logan Ohapi's done pretty well with the Angels. Jonah Heim with Texas. Obviously, he's going to get a lot of votes because they're the World Series team. They're the hosts, all that stuff. But Connor Wong has quietly turned into a top five catcher in the American League. And when he was first acquired in that trade, nobody thought he was going to really become anything like that. And we weren't even sure if he was going to be a catcher. Like, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to be playing second base or if he was going to be sort of moved around a little bit. He's not only become a full-time catcher, he's become one of the best defensive catchers in baseball. So that's been a huge plus for them. And then the fact that he's able to hit for power, you know, we talked about heading into this season, right-handed power was something that this team was severely lacking heading into the season. We didn't know what we were going to get from Tyler O'Neill. We were hoping that we were going to get this, which has been good, but he does have a injury history and all that. So for Connor Wong to step up and be that other right-handed power bat out of the catching position, and he can run too. He's, you know, he's got a good arm. So he really gives you everything you need. And it is going to be interesting when Kyle Teal starts to show that he's ready, what the Red Sox approach is going to be. Because, I mean, do you sell high on Connor Wong? Are you that much of a believer in Kyle Teal that you're willing to trade Connor Wong, maybe get a really good package back for him? Or, you know, if you're contending at the time, do you trade Connor Wong for a frontline starting pitcher and do something like that? I don't know. I don't know if, what kind of return he would yield right now. He's 27, so he's still under 30. Again, right-handed power, good defensive catcher. It's just a matter of, you know, do other teams believe that this is what Connor Wong is, or is he just having one really good season and then he's going to drop off? So, and I'm not saying I want the Red Sox to sell him. I, you know, in my mind, you know, having two really good catchers is not a bad thing. So, and I'm not convinced that Kyle Teal is going to be up this year. I'm thinking it's probably going to be more next year. I know some people are saying that he, you know, by September he could be a call up. I would highly doubt that. I mean, unless he really, really goes on a tear, but he's still in double A right now. You'd have to at least get a little bit going on in AAA before that were to, you know, to happen. So, but at the end of the day, you've got at least one really good catcher and you've got one supposedly really good one on the way. That's a pretty good situation to be in.
So if the Red Sox are contending, you won't see Teal. I would agree with that. If we weren't contending, then they might. I mean, because, I mean, that could be beneficial. I think it was beneficial for Abreu, Rafaela, just to kind of get them somewhat acclimated a little bit. But I don't see, and he's, it's not like he's a righty bat that will help you in terms of balance. So there's just really no incentive with that. Getting back to Wong real quick, just comparing the last 2 years, because, you know, he's, I don't know if he was really the primary catcher last year. Well, he played 126 games. So, yeah, I guess that would make him the primary catcher. He had a 33% strikeout rate last year. So that's like almost Bobby Dalbec territory. I think Dalbec's around 36, 37. And so 33% last year, 20% this year. So he's really cut those strikeouts down. And on the season, he's only got 53 strikeouts plus, if he got any today, one strikeout. So yeah, 54 strikeouts on the year. So that's elite, I would say.
And that's what we were talking about earlier with Rafaela. Like, if, you know, it can improve your entire career trajectory if you cut down on strikeouts. And it's certainly done that for Connor Wong. So, yeah, that's a huge change for him. And he really has become a potent middle-of-the-order kind of bat. So that combined with his defense, you know, that's been great to see. So moving on to number three in our top five, we're going to go to the starting rotation. The only guy out of the starting rotation that actually showed up this series, and that would be Tanner Houck, as usual, just doing what he does. You know, six innings, scoreless ball, you know, a couple of strikeouts, had a no-hitter going into the fifth, I believe, until it was broken up. So, again, you know, exactly what he should do against a lineup like this. But we talked about it. Oakland's lineup is not that big of a joke. They've got some scrappy hitters. They've got some guys like, you know, Rooker that can, you know, he can run into one. He can hurt you. And they did damage against Bayo. They did damage against Pivetta. So, you know, they show that they can score runs. But Tanner Houck, as usual, comes in. He's your ace. He's the stopper. And he did his job. You know, scoreless baseball. Chase Anderson cleaned it up after that. Red Sox offense did what they had to do, put up a seven spot, and it was just easy. And it's like, it just feels so easy and calm whenever Tanner Houck is on the mound. And it's such a contrast to when you have to settle in for a Brian Bayo start. And you're like, okay, geez, please nobody make an error because he's going to start losing his mind or something like that. And of course, it happened this week. And it's like, you almost want to have Brian Bayo sit down with Tanner Houck and have Tanner Houck teach him how to just be calm and like not lose your absolute mind whenever something doesn't go your way. And not that Tanner Houck's, you know, run into a ton of adversity this year. He's had a couple of starts where he's been touched up early and, you know, stuff like that. But for the most part, he just cruises. And it's just great to see that, you know, he's keeping it up, you know, this late into the season, you know, as we reach the halfway point here. He really is having the best year of his career. And, you know, hopefully he stays healthy. Hopefully he keeps it up. I think that he will. I actually don't mind that, you know, they pulled him after the sixth inning in this game. I think just, you know, let him rest. You know, let him just take some time off because he's been your workhorse so far this season. And he's already surpassed his innings, you know, in terms of his career high. He's already surpassed that. So they will have to be careful and they will have to really monitor him in the second half, make sure that he doesn't start to break down. But assuming he doesn't, I mean, he's going to be right there at the end in that Cy Young race. And that's been such a great development for the Red Sox this year. So, Nick, what are your thoughts on Tanner Houck's performance?
Exactly what you said. I think watching Tanner Houck compared to Brian Bayo is so nice. Like, he's so calm, cool, collected. I mean, nothing ever bothers him. I mean, it's going to be really cool to see him come out of the pen in an all-star game. You know, 2 years ago, did you ever think Tanner Houck would be in an all-star game? I didn't. Maybe as a reliever, maybe as a closer, but he's a top five starter in this game right now, and he's going to pitch in the all-star game. And it's so nice to watch him. Just if he gets into trouble, he's so calm. He gets out of it. If he has adversity, he doesn't get upset like Bayo. He throws his glove, or, you know, like it's so nice and relaxing just to watch Tanner Houck throw the baseball and get outs and dominate. It's not a great team, but he was really good tonight.
Terry.
So, this was a much needed solid outing for him. I mean, just in his last two, I mean, he probably had his worst start of the season two starts ago against the San Diego Padres. 9 hits, 7 earned runs, only walked one in that start, but still a rough outing. And then in New York, not quite as rough, but not pretty either. 3 1/3, gave up just 1 earned run, but walked 4, wasn't efficient. It was a pretty quick hook. Only struck out 1 as well. So if he had a bad start against Oakland, like, I'd be sounding the alarms right now. And where is he at with his innings real quick? So he pitched, what, 6 tonight? So he is basically right at his career high, which is 119 innings, which I think was in the minor leagues, if I'm not mistaken. But so he's basically right at that, right at the halfway point of the season. And it was pretty good.
Yeah, just another dominant outing from him. I was curious to see how it was going to go because Paul Skeens earlier that same day was pulled you know, in the middle of a no-hitter because his pitch count was at 99 heading into the seventh inning. Tanner Houck, up until it was broken up, his pitch count was pretty high, but he had the no-hitter going. I was like, ooh, are we going to run into a similar kind of thing? It was broken up by Kyle McCann, unfortunately, but would have been interesting to see what Cora would have done if Houck had gotten to like the seventh inning, you know, close to 100 pitches or maybe at 100, still had the no-hitter going. Would he have kept him in? Would he not have, you know? In a way, it's kind of, you know, I'm glad we didn't have to face that decision because, I don't know, it just creates more problem than it's worth. But definitely a great outing from him and excited to see what his second half holds for sure. So we will now move to number two on our top five, going back to the offense on this one. So, Terry, who we got coming in at number two?
That is going to be Willier Abreu. And we were just destroying Abreu on, it might have been last week's early week rotation with Charlie and Jeremy. I mean, he has just had a really tough month, basically since coming back from his ankle injury when he took that tumble into the dugout. I mean, he was hitting, let's see, just in the last, not too bad, I guess, in the last 30. Maybe the last few games have helped that. But 258 with a 298 on base. But this was a big series for him. He drove in four runs in the first game. He had a home run included with that. Just rifling the ball, hitting it hard, putting it in play. Was 0 for 1, came off the bench in the second game, so didn't really play a factor there. And then today in the finale, 3 for 4 with another home run, this one to straightaway center, drove in two runs. So we're wondering who the real Willier Abreu is, and hopefully he's trending back, you know, in that direction, you know, where he was in the first 6 weeks of the season before things got a little bit quiet. But, you know, he's a guy that nobody seems to want to trade. Everyone is pretty adamant he should be in our long-term, you know, plan, probably an everyday corner outfielder. But, you know, we just need to see a little bit more consistency. I think they are going to have to ease him in against lefties at some point. So we'll see what happens. But this was definitely a statement series against Oakland. We'll see if it continues against Kansas City, where the pitching will be a lot tougher. Last I checked, which was actually a little while ago, but the Royals have had a top five pitching staff. I think they were fourth last I checked. And Seth Lugo has the lowest ERA in the American League, and we're going to be facing him in game one or two of that series. So we'll see how some of these younger guys do against that staff.
Nick.
So I'll give my take on Willier Abreu. So I saw a stat about him. You know how he started the season very slow? And it was about 15 games into the season where he finally got it going. And I think the first game in the A's series was 14 games back since he got off the IL. So maybe he's just a slow starter and he gets going once he sees a bunch of pitches. Or maybe he's just a, you know, like a streaky kind of guy. You mentioned he's very streaky. He gets hot and he gets really cold. But I hope he's just a slow starter and once he gets off the IL, he gets going, and he's going to be hot for the rest of the season. That's what I really hope about Willier Abreu.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned, Terry, about having to ease him in against lefties, eventually they are going to have to. If he's going to be an everyday corner outfielder, he's got to start against lefties. You can't hide him. You can't always bench him. I know that Cora really likes putting Ref Snyder in the lineup when he's got a lefty on the mound. It makes sense. Ref Snyder kills lefties, but Abreu is one of your, he could be one of your young foundation pieces. So, you know, if Abreu was a veteran, then I'd be like, fine, platoon him. I don't care. But if you really care about his development and you want him to be an everyday player, he's got to face lefties. It was nice to see him get a base hit off of one in game three this series. But, you know, generally they still try to hide him. And I just think that a guy like that, you have to, you know, you have to almost let him, you know, learn that way. But it's tough because the Red Sox are a contending team. So if you're going up against a tough lefty and you really need to win, do you want to put Abreu in the lineup or do you want Ref Snyder in there? Right now, you probably want Ref Snyder. It's just a tough, it's a tough scenario for Cora to be. And we'll see what he does this weekend because game one, they've got Cole Reagans, who is a nasty lefty. So I don't know if Abreu is going to play game one or if they're going to try and hide him again. My guess is that he'll sit on the bench, maybe come in later when they get to the bullpen. But you're right, this weekend against Kansas City, three really tough pitchers. I mean, Reagans, Lugo, and Brady Singer. Good luck. So this could be a weekend where Abreu, you know, goes 0 for 12, you know, or 0 for 8, you know, 0 for 9, whatever. He is streaky in that way. But I still believe in the player in general. I think he's a good athlete. He's shown defensively that he can play right field very well, which at Fenway is a hell of a challenge. It was nice to see the power come back this series. He had a double, had a homer to straightaway center. Granted, it kind of just snuck over the fence, but whatever, you'll take it. He hit it to dead center. So it was nice to see the pop get back in that bat as well. So obviously would like to see a little bit more consistency, but he's 24. He's a young guy. You know, again, someone that we're going to see how he develops, you know, as the season goes on. But I still think that, you know, at the moment, I don't want to trade him. You know, and I've seen some of these trade scenarios on Twitter, like, oh, would you swap Abreu for Randy Arozarena? Absolutely not. Why would I want Randy Arozarena, who's, you know, on the decline of his career, who's 5 years older, and give up Abreu, who's 24 and can still turn into something really great? Like, no way. So, unfortunately, it's that time of year. It's that hot stove season. Like, you're going to see a lot of those trade scenarios thrown around Twitter of, you know, will you Abreu for this guy? Will you Abreu for that guy? And it's, you know, it's all a function of the prospect humpers because they look at him and they think, well, he's in Roman Anthony's way, so we got to trade him. And I'm sitting here going, I don't know what Roman Anthony's going to be, but I know what Willie Abreu is, and I like it so far. So I don't want to trade him. I know a lot of Red Sox Twitter does, but I don't. I want to see what he does in the second half, and I do want to see if Cora lets him start against some lefties going forward. Maybe he picks and chooses, you know, but that's what I want to see.
So against lefties, it's not pretty, admittedly. He's hitting 194, which you might look at that and say, well, you can work with that. I mean, it's a foundation, and, you know, if it goes higher, you're good. But where it gets ugly is no home runs, only two driven in. Again, this is against lefties. But the real damning numbers are a 226 slugging against lefties. That's like not even like if that was his overall slugging, you're like you're going to spend the rest of your life in the minor leagues. And then a 491 OPS. So he's just not finding a way to make hard contact against them. And it just shows that he doesn't have a feel for it. But if he's at the same time, I mean, you kind of have to, I think you still have to mix him in here and there. Jason, you kind of touched on it, and I keep saying there's going to be a painful trade, and it's going to involve a player that nobody wants to give up. It might not be in July this year. It might be this winter, but it's going to happen. Would you rather trade Abreu or Anthony?
Right now, I'd rather trade Roman Anthony because I will always take the MLB proven product over the kid in AA who's been streaky and hurt and who also randomly accelerated through the system because a couple of publications put him like in the top five for some reason. That to me just doesn't add up. He kind of like came out of nowhere. He didn't have the same pedigree that Marcelo Mayer and Kyle Teal had. Those guys were high draft picks. Everyone knew they were going to be really good. Roman Anthony, I feel like, came out of nowhere. And you look at his numbers in AA, they're not like, he's not tearing the cover off the ball. So I don't know if Roman Anthony is ever going to be something special. What I'm watching with Willy Abreu is that he's helping you win games at the major league level right now. And he's still only 24 years old. So as of this moment, I would rather trade Roman Anthony.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
So as someone who's grown up in South Florida and has known Roman Anthony a really long time, kind of, I mean, he's younger than I am, and I've seen him play baseball in high school. I've seen him play, you know, in the minors a little bit. I'd rather trade Roman Anthony than Willy Abreu. And I think Roman Anthony's a stud. But right now, if we're going to try to go make the playoffs, you have to trade the minor leaguer. And Willy Abreu is going to be a 270, 260, 20 homer guy. Like, I really think that's like what he can be. And if you can go get a stud starting pitcher or like a two or three guy for Roman Anthony, I think you do it every single day of the week, because you have too many left-handed hitters. And you brought up Cole Reagans, and Cole Reagans is one of the, maybe the top three, top five left-handed pitchers in this game. And we can't compete against those guys with 8 to 7 lefties in the lineup. It's just impossible. So you got to, if you have an opportunity to trade Roman Anthony, might as well do it, because you can't have 8 lefties in the lineup in the long term.
So it just depends on the player we're getting back. I mean, I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I do like Abreu, so I'd love it if, you know, he just continued to be part of the future here. So that's my take, but I think an Abreu guy could be the guy that eventually does go. We'll see. And Jason, you had some Randy Arozarena slander in there. I love the guy. I don't know why. But I just want to point out, I know his overall numbers this season aren't good. It's probably the worst season of his career so far, at least since he's been a Tampa Ray. I think he came from the Cardinals. Like, everybody just took turns fleecing the Cardinals for everyone. Sandy Alcantara. So many guys came out of that system. But in the last month, Arozarena is hitting a very solid 279 with a 382 on base, 4 home runs. So he's kind of trending back to where he was. But the bad news is it looks like the Rays are going to be sellers. They already did trade Savali to the Brewers. So I don't know if he's going to be traded or not. How long is I meant to have this up. I was just wondering how much time Arozarena has. I can't see Breslow really targeting him and making a deal. Free agent in 2027. So hypothetically, if we did get him, we'd have him for 2 more years. And what would that be? His age 32 season. So he's kind of in the Duran category in terms of hitting free agency a little bit late. But I will say, though, I mean, in October, I mean, him and Devers hitting back-to-back, like, that would be the most insane 2-3, 3-4, however you line them up, just based on how they've been. But, again, he's just the one guy, like, I'm a Nick Castellanos guy, and I'm the only one on the crew, so.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked Arozarena for a long time. I would have made that trade maybe 2 years ago. I don't know if I make that trade this year.
He's hard to get 2 years ago, though. Like,
he was. Yeah, he was. But assuming Willy Abreu is what he is now 2 years ago, that's still a pretty good start for a package to get him. But even then, I don't know. I don't know if I would have done it. So I'm happy. I'm content with Abreu, and I hope that I hope they don't get too tempted by anybody to deal him away, because if he's starting to heat up, that's going to be huge for them. So with that, Terry, brace yourself, because we are going to head to number one on our top five, a guy that has been much maligned by many people in this fan base so far this season. But Nick, take us home. Who we got coming in at number one?
So number one is Masataka Yoshida. I mean, he went 2-for-3 in the first game with an RBI and also a walk. And he went 0-for in the second game, which, who cares, it was a loss. In the third game, He went 3-for-4 with a home run and 4 RBIs. And I've been known to hate Masataka Yoshida. I think the biggest – if you want to improve this team, you have to get rid of Masataka Yoshida because he doesn't fit the team very well. But this series, he really, really impressed. And he's been pretty good the last, like, 2 to 3 series. So, I mean, hopefully he gets his trade value ups because that's the guy I want to trade if that's possible. I don't think it's possible. But if there's any guy on this team – that I really want to trade, it would be Masataka Yoshida. So,
Terry.
So, everybody in the war room loves to chirp me when Yoshida does good because I'm the biggest hater on the podcast, and we'll see if Nick rivals me here going forward with that. But I'm just tonight, Lori and Jeremy were like, you better say something nice about him on the podcast tonight. And here's my take on that. When he finally has trade value, if he ever has trade value, I'll start giving him credit. But I'm just not there yet. And as I'm looking to next year, you know, 2025 and 2026, I feel like we're going to lose a lot of games with Yoshida and Story both in the lineup. I just, you're going to have the streakiness of their offense. You'll have some nice defense with Story, I assume. I mean, we'll see how he comes back from that shoulder injury. But I feel like you have to find a way to trade one of these guys. And then the other one, if they just don't figure it out, they're going to get Pablo Sandoval just cut with 3 years remaining. And the Yankees did it with Ellsbury, and Ellsbury was actually a good player. Like in his final season, he had very respectable numbers. I don't have them up, but a very good third outfielder. Let's put it that way. But they had Judge, they just acquired Stanton, and they had a platoon with Gardner and Hicks. So Ellsbury, it's like they put him in the witness protection program or something. He just went away. And that's kind of what we need to do with either Story or Yoshida, whichever one doesn't work out. Because, I mean, could you imagine where we would be right now if Trevor Story was in there every day and not David Hamilton, who's been, aside from maybe the last week and a half, been one of the best players since early May? I you definitely don't have as many wins. And so, but having said that, I mean, if Yoshida ends up being what he was initially projected to be, I mean, that's a win-win. It's just an extremely tough sell for me right now. If we're getting WBC Yoshida, I mean, that would be great, but that's not who we've gotten. I mean, he stays hot for about a month each season and then, you know, just mediocre and lots of ground balls to second base, double plays. So he tuned up Oakland, and I think he had a pretty decent Yankees series. He's had a good last two or three series here. It was only 2-for-12 actually in that Yankees series, but still.
I mean, I'll take it because this current iteration of the Red Sox lineup is probably what you're getting for the stretch run. I don't see them adding a major impact bat that's going to substitute anyone that's in the lineup currently. And from what I read with, you know, what Lou Maloney was talking about on Twitter regarding Tristan Casas, it sounds like he's much further away than we initially believed. I mean, Maloney was saying, like, if he's lucky, he'll get back in the lineup by mid to late August. And then he said, and even then, he's not going to be the same guy. He's going to need a couple of weeks to get himself situated again because he's gone 4+ months without seeing live pitching. So you're going to need Yoshida to heat up and continue to do this. Because, I don't think there's any help coming. I don't think they're going to add an impact bat at the deadline. They'll add somebody just to appease people, but it's not going to be anyone, like, not in a Rosa Reina or anything like that. It's going to be something very, very small. They'll probably add a bullpen arm. They might get a back end starter, but this lineup you're looking at, this is what you're getting. And look, the lineup's scoring runs, so that's fine. Dom Smith is doing a fine job at first base. So in a way, you lucked out by adding him when you did. But Yoshida heating up right now, it's coming at a good time because your offense can't just be Duran, Devers, O'Neill. It's got to be the whole 1 through 9, you know, and with Devers in the middle causing havoc, but it's got to be everybody because your starting pitching is good, but it has taken a little bit of a step back as we've gotten closer to the halfway point here, apart from Tanner Houck, who really hasn't, but Bayo is starting to go backwards. Connor Crawford reset himself, which is good to see. But again, he's a guy to keep your eye on in the second half because his innings are starting to creep up. So, you know, that's something to definitely keep your eye on. You're probably going to get another Cooper Criswell appearance this weekend. We have no idea how that's going to go. So your pitching is, you know, it's going to be a little bit suspect. And who knows, maybe your closer gets traded, you know, by the deadline. And you're looking at Liam Hendricks coming off of Tommy John trying to close games for you. So your bullpen might be a little bit shaky too. You need guys like Yoshida, who should be a 2100 guy when he's healthy and really going. You need a guy like him to start driving the ball, hitting for a little bit more power. Even when he's making outs, he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it online. So he's not, it's not the choppers to second base that we used to see all the time. And maybe it was just the thumb injury really needed to heal in order for him to get himself straight again. Who knows? I mean, you know, thumb injuries are awful for hitters. It's like the worst thing you can imagine. So maybe that's what it was. And to me, the thing that I really am impressed with is that when runners are in scoring position, he drives them in. Like he's looking pretty good with runners in scoring position. I don't know what his actual numbers are. They may not bear out the same because he did go through so many struggles early in the year. But lately, if there are guys, you know, in scoring position, he's driving them in. Whether it's, you know, a sharp single or a double, you know, now he's starting to lift the ball a little bit more and he's starting to, you know, find that bullpen in right field a little bit more. So I agree with Nick. He does not fit this team or this lineup. His contract is another albatross contract that, you know, once again, thank you, Chaim, for that one. Him and Trevor Story just, you know, I don't think fit on this team long term, but we're stuck with them. So I don't think Yoshida has any sort of trade value. So I don't think anything's going to happen there. So at this point, you're stuck with him. Might as well enjoy it while he's on a heater. If he's going to keep hitting like this and driving in runs and helping you win games, fine. I'm all for it. Because again, like this is probably going to be your lineup for the stretch course here. So if everyone in that lineup starts heating up and they can score runs at will like they have been, that's all for the better for the playoff push.
I don't know if you want to call it a wish list, but the scenario that I think could be viable that the Red Sox should pursue, because I don't know if Costas is coming back either. And actually, before I get to that, Dan Shaughnessy was on my local station today, and they were talking about his rehab, and Shaughnessy goes, you know, I've been covering baseball for like 50 years. I've never heard of a dry swing before his rehab. So, you know, what's a dry swing? And I just feel like, would it help if you brought him back? Absolutely. Of course. But why mess with it? Why mess with it? If it's just better to keep him out until next year, just do it. And the scenario I presented on the early week show, I can't remember if it was the recap series or if it was Hot Take Tuesday, but I would call up the Blue Jays and try to get Justin Turner, who's hitting very well in the last month. Didn't have a great start, but hitting very well. As of this past weekend, he was hitting like, in the last month, he was hitting like .295 with a .465 on base. So get him, and he's your first baseman. If Casas happens to come back, this ain't going to be popular, considering we were just saying a bunch of nice things about him. But if Yoshida is cold again, he's got options. You can put Turner at DH and send Yoshida down. He might go kicking and screaming. The optics might not look good. But if you're winning, who cares? And I think Justin Turner would do a lot in this lineup. The other guy I would get from Toronto is, and I don't love him. And as I said, I wouldn't have wanted him on a long-term deal or even a 3 or 4 year deal, but you can go get Yusei Kikuchi, who's a lefty. You desperately need a lefty. He can strike guys out. He's having a very Nick Pavetta-esque season where, you know, he'll, for every 3 starts he has, one will be a dud and he'll get slapped around a little bit, but it gives you another viable arm. So you'd have Hauk, Crawford, Kikuchi. I mean, that's a pretty good 1 through 3. Gives you a chance without having to really give up anything too significant. You're probably giving up a Nick York in there, but none of your big 3.
Yeah, and I think the Blue Jays are definitely a team to talk to because they just put Kiermaier on waivers the other day. So I think that's sort of them signaling we're waving the white flag. So I think they're definitely open for business. And if the Red Sox wanted to reunite with Justin Turner, I'd be all for it. I don't think you'd have to give up a ton to get him. He's on a short money 1 year deal and he's, you know, what, age 38 now. So, you know, you're not, like you said, you're not giving up anything major out of your system to get him. You're probably giving up a minor leaguer that you've never heard of. So I would definitely call them about that for sure. And again, it just seems like they're open for business. So it's just a matter of, you know, does Breslow want to go for it or, you know, is he going to stand pat? But, you know, obviously time will tell. We'll see how that goes. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Thank you all for tuning in. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for the Kansas City Royals series this weekend. That'll be available for your afternoon commute. And then we will have another episode of Clown Takes coming out this weekend as well. So definitely keep an eye out for that one. Should be an interesting one. So everyone enjoy your weekend and we will see you all later. Take care.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.